Reconvene the hearing of submissions, and at this stage we're hearing from Jeanette Topham. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you.
You've obviously provided your original submission, which we've read, and subsequent evidence, a great wealth of material you've submitted to us, which we've had time to look at, so thank you for doing that. You don't need to read any of that material to us.
I'm not going to. I am going to refer to it.
No, it's good. So as you've probably heard me say to other submitters, you're now very welcome to speak to your submission and highlight the key points you'd like us to take home.
The reason you got so much information is I'm real chalk and slate, and if you read my notes here, you'd see that I'm an untidy chalk and slate. When writing my first submission, I hope to convey that Alan and I are passionate about our farming, about our family and their future. Our philosophy has always been to look after the land and the environment, and it'll look after you for future generations to enjoy. Our decisions have been based on due diligence. We question, we get advice, we evaluate, and then we take actions that we think are appropriate. The Southland Water Plan is about the future generation and the future of farming. So I've approached it with the same approach, due diligence. The maps and articles that I supplied are just a very small proportion of what I've been collecting over the last 5 years. They show where we farm and what we've achieved on the farm at Hedgehub. My submission supports, this talk supports what I've put in my submission. The sources of bacteria, page 2, of fecal bacteria, and the recently released ESR document talks about how several animals have the potential to be bacterial sources. In particular, the ESR plan talks about what impacts ovine pollutants may possibly have on our waterways. And it says we need more research. The trends that I put in show that most of our waterways are in the A to C band, but a lot of them are in the D. And that's not acceptable under the national objective policy. So, however, looking at other data, I realised that the nitrogen's been stable for about the last 5 years, and the phosphate for the last 10. So I think we are holding the line. I see the value in good management practice to achieve water quality results. The SMP project that I gave you in the Upper Waikato has shown to drop nitrogen by 8% and phosphorus by 16%. This has recently been replicated in the Manawatu and the Taranaki, and there are similar results. There is good value in using GMP to improve water quality. Some of the articles that I put in there are all those paper ones, and I can't even remember exactly what I did put in there, and that's a sad thing. But on Hedgehub, Simon's trying out some of the new ideas. Last year he grew fodder beet. It's meant to, in Canterbury, drop nitrogen leaching by 20%. For him, it was a disaster. 20% of his cows got sick with ketosis post-calving. This caused him an enormous amount of stress. We had more vet visits than we've ever had, and he used a lot of drugs to try and save those cows. So he's gone back to the more traditional crops. But this year he intends to use a mop-up crop, as has been suggested, if conditions allow. He knows that nitrogen leaching can be dropped by 20 to 40% by planting these. He's using Italian rye grass in his pasture mixes because it drops nitrogen between 20 to 40% if you're on pure Italian rye. He's tried plantain in the last probably 5 years in his grass mixes because it reduces nitrogen losses. But it's not persistent. It only lasts about 3 years and it's gone. So farmers like Simon are good at adopting new ideas as long as they can see the value in them. If you can show them that, you know, no farmer wants to lose his soil and his nutrients down a waterway. That's why I think I would like to see as much permitted activity rules in your plan. The erosion maps I gave you are from our Tuatapere farm at the lower Waiau. And council, actually, BS council staff took those photos. We're only 3 kilometres from the Waiau Lagoon. And we know that we've lost 8 hectares since we first bought it in 1992. We've actually approached council, Paul Pollard to come out, and we have a plan to stop the erosion. Meridian won't do it for us. They told us to take us to court. So some of the costs, the most effective way will be to rock it, to rock the bank, and the minimum cost of that will be $140,000 if we can get the consents. They've suggested planting crap willow, but that's a pest here, so we need a special consent. Some of the other option, the third one, required getting approval and consent from six different identities. So at this stage, we've put it in the too hard bucket. But we are going to follow it up. So on page 71, rule 115, I would like ES to actually recognise that, I've got a statement later on that I'll read out to you. And I've lost the page. I haven't. Okay, so going back to my original submission, I still believe in policy 9 and 11 that we should remove that policy. Everyone pollutes, all animals pollute. ES has plan 13 that allows for any new intensification of dairying or new dairy farms. I believe the intensive grazing will be covered by your plan in Appendix N and the farm environment plans. ES can monitor what's going on because just stopping dairy is not going to work. 65% of the land in Southland is not in dairy. 165,000 cows, 4.1 million sheep, and 550,000 in the 2015 statistics. Therefore, I want it removed. Revisit it when they're at limit setting, because then you can figure out what the load is and what you need to do. Policy 16, again, I want it changed to all stock classes, not just dairying. Policy 20, rule 20, I see it's all been rewritten. But I still believe that the dairy farming clause should be changed to all stock instead of just dairy farmers, because we all pollute. Rule 22 and 23 have been combined. When we're doing succession planning, we always say it should be fair and equitable. I think dairy farmers in this plan have had quite a big emphasis put on them. However, I do see the value in having some rules. So therefore, on page 56, I'd like rule E changed. I'd like it, instead of being a non-complying activity, I'd like it to be a discretionary consent. Rule 23, I'm pleased to see it changed to allowing 50 hectares as a permitted activity. However, on page 60, rule E again, I'd like it to be a discretionary activity, not a non-complying activity. It'll allow farmers to use Appendix N and give them more time for research to be included. And on page 72 was the last one, rule 35, that I quoted, I put a comment on. Our effluent pond holds 300 million litres when full. As I said, we never have it at 75% full because we see it as an environmental risk because we're on a floodplain, even though it's up in the air. We've always kept it as low as possible. It's clay lined, but we've put an impermeable, I've forgotten the name of them, synthetic liner right across the bottom of it. The reason being we have had water down there. So we've put two tile drains. They're tiled out into the paddock where they're drawn to one tile drain, and it then goes into our local creek. Therefore, I can see that we could test above that tile and below that tile, and we should be able to tell whether we're getting some leaking from our pond. So I want the drop test ruled out. The last thing I'd like to mention is I had a catchment group last Wednesday. It was for LEPs that you were talking about earlier.
Yep.
I got 19 farmers there, 17 that have never engaged in any environmental issues. When I rang them, and it took days, I can assure you, I said to them, are you aware of the Southland Water Plan? Are you aware of your requirements to farm in this? Nah, it doesn't affect us, we're sheep and beef farmers. And actually, Dean ended up having to take the workshop because Terry McFarlane got trapped with fog at 9 o'clock in the morning in Christchurch, and I'm going, oh my goodness, because I hadn't done a land environment plan. Mm. But the comments that came back for them was, oh, we hadn't done it because we thought it would be too erroneous. Oh, I do that anyway in my head. Yeah, I could do that. Mm. Oh, these are the differences I'm going to make. I'm going to fertilize, I'm going to test and see what my fertilizer levels are. Oh, I could graze that crop differently. Oh, I could make that whole, that swampy area at the bottom, I could make that as my catchment. So I think ES needs to help with this education rather than legislate regulations and legislation. The best buy-in you will get is by engaging us. So that's why I've changed some of the permitted activities and the rules in your proposed Southland Water Plan. That's it. Any questions?
We shall see, Morris. Oh. Out of your end.
No hard ones, Morris.
Should have been more assertive.
Pardon?
Well, I am assertive.
I was joking.
Well, yes, I do have a few. You did? Oh, the first one was it was about farm environment plans. Mm-hmm. We had other people saying farm environment plans were Southern ones were quite complex, and they thought the beef and lamb ones were simpler and better. And Dairy NZ, you have a milk sustainability plan.
We've got that, and a focus. They encourage a focus farm plan, which comes from EAS, the sustainable milk plan, a nutrient budget, and we have a farm environment plan and policies that encompass all of our farm. The land environment plan we did was plan one. It has the real good basics of a farm environment plan. They can extend that to a wintering plan or to a farm environment plan, given the right guidance. If we're allowed, as you say in 42A, that we can either make our own plans or we can get an audited assessor, that audit assessor, my daughter-in-law does them. It's $5,000 to do them. And it's about 10 hours to do a nutrient budget, and then it's more time to do that. So if we can engage farmers and get them to do something easy, Morris, that they can do themselves, we don't want to spend money if it's not going to make a difference. So, yeah, I think, for me, we do all the things that are in Appendix N. We're in a lower-lying area, and we're in that area where the Dunsdale's going to go into the hedgerope goes into the Makarewa, and the Makarewa goes into the Ariti. So we, as farmers, we see the importance of these farm environment plans. And I don't think they're too hard to do if you let them base it on what's in their industry. Beef and lamb are trying to develop a type of overseer plan, something that's easy for the sheep and beef guys to put in. So if we don't all engage, and if we don't all, little changes by all of us could make a really big difference.
They need to be mandatory then, the plans do?
I think that...
Some sort.
I don't know how. I mean, you've got, I think, 3,000 farmers in Southland, is that correct? Somewhere around there. How you're going to monitor, how you're going to get someone to read all those plans, I don't know. But if you think there's a problem, or a problem area, like I recognise that the Matara and up around Dipton and Lumsden and there, they've got some issues. But at least it allows farmers to take ownership of those issues. They're innovative. They'll figure out, if you give them enough time, how to solve it. But yes, I do think, as I suggested in here, we do need to have some permitted activity that allows everyone to do a land environment plan or a farm plan.
Your sustainable milk plan, in 2013 your nitrogen losses were 38 kilograms, and then the next year they went to 19. How did you manage that?
We've got a runoff that my son leases it, above us. The change in the nitrogen was because we were wintering on farm. We are now wintering off farm, the soils are different, and what they do is different. Simon is totally self-sufficient, he makes all his own feed, but he only puts on what he needs. He's tested every paddock to see what the nutrient levels in it, and if they're above that 25 to 35, he didn't fertilise them. He uses his effluent as a fertiliser. It's a valuable resource if applied correctly and when the grass is growing and the soil capacity is right. So yes, he did get it down to 19. I know it's slightly higher at the moment because he has changed from the fodder bed.
Thank you. Lastly, we have quite a few submissions from sheep and beef farmers about fencing off sheep from streams, and they say it's not a very good idea for a number of reasons. But are you suggesting that we should be considering that because of the problem of sheep pathogens or fecals getting into streams?
It's not really my field. I don't do the research. I think more needs to be done. I think, yeah, if it's in the waterways that it's showing up and what they're doing, then somehow it's getting into there. Fencing off is expensive. Ours is all done. We've done riparian plantings, about $10,000 worth, and we're still continuing. It's a huge cost for them because sheep and beef farmers are losing money. But I do see some advantages in keeping them out of the water, keeping the nutrients and the effluent that the sheep are producing on farm. Maybe they just graze it at different times of the year and then put a fence up and don't let them go in. There's smart things they could do. Maybe I think intensive winter grazing should include sheep and cattle on farm. Because if you see the some of the mess that's made, and then it rains and you see those ephemeral, whatever they're called, waterways running down the paddock, and they're coloured. And suddenly that paddock's nice and clean. So I think good management practice could be able to help that too.
Okay, thanks very much.
You good? Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Part of your evidence you've given us, that document, Focus Activity Farm Plans.
Mm.
Now that's a pre-empt, it's pre the four farm environmental management plan.
Which one are you talking about?
Well, it's a pathway toward completing a full farm environmental plan.
Yes, the land environment plan that we did.
Yes.
Yeah, that was specifically asked for us for it by sheep farmers. That is not a full farm environment plan. They would need to continue through to do the full farm environment plan. And I am aware that the Overseer 6, it's really hard for them to use to get a nutrient budget. So I'm pleased that they're excluded out of that at the moment. But in time, with what Beef and Lamb are developing and more research, yeah, I think they should be able to, apparently the one they're developing should be simple for them to input their numbers and get a figure out at the end.
So the focus activity plan, is that a useful tool, is it?
For dairy farmers, it was, I think, because we had to supply all our nutrient. You know, Simon has to record where his fertiliser goes, what feeds he buys in, where the nitrogen is applied, when it's applied, and at what rate, and the same with fertiliser. So by having the farm focus plan, we found out that we were doing most things right, but one of their recommendations was we've got single wires along our tracks and we've got 8 kilometres of waterways. And they suggested, even though the slope of the track wasn't going to allow it to get in the waterway, to move the wire out about that much. So we did. There's another crossing where they felt, it's only used once a month, but they did feel that with the edges it could go in there. So they suggested we took it up that way and then had some way of it running away so it didn't go in. So for us, it was a valuable tool, yes.
Yes, yeah, I could see it identifies objectives, yes. Things that can be done.
Yes.
In terms of the erosion question you raise in the Tuatapere Waiau area, is that the river operating within its normal range, flood range?
It's because, well, fishing game say that they need 150 cubics for sustainable fish life. Now, I know that river at times only runs with 10 cubics. So what happens in a heavy rainfall event is that the guardians of the lakes will not allow them to put any dirty water into Manapouri. So it has to all bypass and come down the Waiau. We'll get about 7 hours warning, and honestly, it can go from this high to 3 metres high, and it's just fair pumping. So they, it's of a national importance and they're allowed to do it. But it is that, yes, it is the change in the water flow and the change in the gravel bars out in the river that are pushing it into our banks. Before it was down that part of the farm, now it's up this part of the farm. And we're hoping, like anything, that a big flood will go through when they do it and move it back over that way. But we can't be guaranteed, yes. They've got pictures of the soil just sitting in the river that's been eroded. And we've lost the stub bank and we've lost all our tree stems.
Thank you.
Here. Yes, your preliminary submission on Rule 23, you said intensive winter grazing should be based on nutrient input and environmental risk.
Yeah.
Right, okay? We need to have this quantifiable. Do we have the tools to do that with enough accuracy to achieve the outcomes that we want? And what might those tools be?
I don't really know the answer to that, Eric. All I know is that as farmers, we've got to stop trying to put it in there. Overseer 6 comes with about 30% error. And I gave you the economic data report, has an error to it as well. I think time we might, yes. But I think it's going to take some research and some development of those tools to do it. But all we can do at the moment as farmers is work with what we've got, which is good management practice, and limit what's going in to our rivers. How are you going to figure out what the load is?
I'm seeking advice.
I haven't researched that.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that. Okay. That's cool.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have, if I may, through you, Mr. Chair, the officer, I'm looking at Rule 35, discharge of agricultural effluent, and looking at B2. And it refers there to pond drop level. I'm just wondering whether that's the right word or it should be pond drop test, as referred to in Appendix P. And I'd like to ask you, Jeanette, a question around, I think your literage calculation was wrong. You said 300 million, it should be 3 million.
3 million, sorry, I probably did. It's a bit nerve-wracking sitting up here watching you guys and trying to get it right, and I've done my slate and chalk several times. Yeah, it is 3 million, Lloyd.
I just want to pick up your comment about the drop test, and I think I've got it right. You're actually asking that a drop test be done on ponds that do not have liners and do not have drainage systems to pick up any discharge if there's a leaking liner. So in other words, you're asking for a drop test to be done on unlined clay ponds through the consenting process, or for the consenting process, to make sure they don't leak.
I'm asking, like, ours was certified by an engineer. We've got that way that we can check if it's leaking. I know some of the fully lined ones have got, like, portals that you can look to see if they're leaking. I'm saying we need, that the drop test is difficult to achieve, especially out where Andrew farms at Tapri. He gets a lot of wind and coastal rubbish weather go through. I'm asking that the drop test be amended or dropped, so that to change it to something like at when we need to renew our consents, which for us will be in 2020, if we can prove that we can mitigate or measure any possible leaks, then we shouldn't have to do the drop test. Does that make sense or not,
Lloyd? I think we're talking about the same thing in two different ways. So what the plan's actually saying really is a drop test that should be done to give an independent advice to whether this pond is actually leaking or not as part of the reconsenting process.
That's correct.
The question that has been raised is if the pond is lined and there are drains underneath the pond, and inspection portholes are in there, do you actually need to do a drop test?
That's what I think too. No, I believe you do not.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I've got a question for you.
Okay, well.
A lot of submitters, including you, have suggested to us that we should amend the plan so that if a farmer has done a farm environment management plan, that should be sufficient, and there then shouldn't be a need for them to be required to get gain resource consents for things like intensive winter grazing and cultivation. So that's a consistent theme coming through. Two questions I'd like to ask you about that, given the background you have outlined to us that you've been involved in. First question is, if we were of a mind to do that, how do we ensure, with the emphasis on ensure, that the farm environment plan is of a sufficiently high quality?
Well, I believe ours is because we've got the sustainability team in and we've done all those other ones. I think you need to have some written evidence that it is. It could, if the farmer can show that they're actually mitigating the losses off the of their intensive winter grazing, then I believe the onus is on them to prove it to you. And all you've got to do is ask for the farm environment plan, give it to one of your sustainability officers, and they will tell you whether it's going to work or not. But it's the monitoring of them that I see as a problem for the council, yes.
Yeah, I'm sort of going to ask about that next. So in terms of that first question though, if it was a farm environment plan done by Environment Southland's land sustainability team, or if it was, for example, a beef and lamb level 3 plan, do you think that would be a sufficient level of certainty for us?
Yeah.
The second question then is, having assured ourselves that the plan would be of sufficient quality, how do we then ensure that it's actually implemented?
I think a bit like what that other, the lady said, you've just got to have faith. No, that's not the correct term. That, you know, farmers don't want to cause a problem for the environment. They want it. I mean, our kids had hours of fun in the wire, and they're down in the hedgehog playing too, and I've got grandkids. So there has to be a social responsibility, and I think if we educate and tell people why they're doing it and the advantages of doing it, I think people will do their darndest because they know it's the best thing and the right thing to do.
Yeah. And these are important questions, and I'm sure, Mr. McCallum-Clark, that the officers will address this in reply. Because for us to accept those submissions and rely on farm environment plans instead of the need for resource consents is a major shift. And there's existing case law from the Environment Court that came out of the hearings on the one plan and the Manawa 2 that quite explicitly states that a voluntary regime does not work, has not worked, and cannot be continued in New Zealand if we are to maintain and protect water quality. So we've got that case law we need to reflect on.
I've been thinking about this quite a bit, and this is just my own personal view. Maybe our industry partners that we work alongside, if they could come up with a template or a portal where we could put the information in. The problem is who owns the information? But if we could do something like that, so it's a standardised farm environment management plan for certain things, and then everyone just adds their own individual bit. I mean, I know you guys are working alongside Dairy NZ, Fonterra, Environment Southland, your own teams, to try and find an answer to this. But if we could make something that's sort of standardised, that will fit all farms in some of the basic questions, and then the rest of the information comes in, if it's ticked off, because we get audited by assured quality every year. You guys come out and test our water. You test you look where our irrigators are going. So for us, I think it's probably a lot easier for you to follow what dairy farmers are doing. It's the other one. So maybe Beef and Lamb could help the council with that, so that you don't have the situation that happened in Horizons.
Yeah.
And you guys get taken to the Environment Court.
Well, that was a different issue because they weren't implementing the rules in their plan. Mm-hmm. They weren't requiring resource consents to be applied for and processed properly, so that's a different issue. Would you support then ES doing some kind of auditing regime of these farm environment plans? On not every year, but every 3 to 5 years, maybe doing an audit to see if they have been implemented?
It's going to cost.
Well, that's yes, a separate issue. So yeah. Principle first.
Yeah, principle. Yes. In principle, I don't mind you looking at our farm every 5 to 10 years and what we're doing. But you have to be very clear what you're looking for.
Yeah. All right, that's very helpful. Thank you very much for coming in and answering that question. Gavin Wood Farm.